Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with Tom Fairbanks. Tom engineering and producing our program on the other side of the glass. Tom, did you get any of that birthday cake? I know I had a piece. And there's nothing, when you're in radio and somebody offers you a piece of cake or candy or cookies.
That's part of the credo of a broadcaster. You never turn down free food.
No, you never do. Yeah, Eddie, as Eddie just said, you don't, what did you just say, Eddie Salaya?
Don't look the gift horse in the mouth.
Nor
a gift cake either.
Sugar, a little bit of sugar rush there. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. It's Friday, September the 8th, 2023. Our radio station, 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's trusted source for news and talk. We'll begin our 14th year in January for our radio program, 36th year on TV and radio in Tucson. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. That's the place for all of our, not only the live listening, but podcasts over the past 12 and a half years. Pretty much every show we have done is there. So it's becoming now an historic document with so many shows. The Buckmaster Show live line, 790-2040, is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. If you have a question or comment anytime during the hour, we would be pleased to put you on the air. Our media partners, thank you, Dylan Smith and your team, which now includes my old buddy Jim Ninsel, TucsonSentinel.com, Dan Shear, Green Valley News, and Sahorita Sun. I see that WIC Communications, Dan's organization, has now acquired the Arizona Daily Sun. Eddie Salaya is here from the Star. Yeah, so they picked up the Sun, which was a part of your, at the Star, Lee Enterprises.
Yes.
So that WIC bought it from Lee.
Curious.
Yeah, it's very curious. That's for another time, right, Eddie? Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Friday Focus interview, Dr. Ravi Shaw is with us on our live line. Dr. Shaw is president of the 5-member Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. Dr. Shaw, how are you?
I'm good, good. Happy afternoon and happy Friday
to you
and your listeners.
How is your new job going? You are the physician at the Pima County Jail. Is that correct?
Right. I started working in the Pima County Jail almost 2 months ago. So I've been here taking care of a very vulnerable group of patients, as you can imagine here.
Yeah, that's a huge job. But so far, you like it.
Yeah, it's been a great group of folks here, both the staff as well as the correction officers and, of course, the inmates here who are here and definitely appreciative of anything we can do for them medically.
Also, I want to, of course, formally introduce Eddie Salaya, breaking news reporter for the Arizona Daily Star, host of Hear Weed, WEED Go podcast. He graduated from Pima Community College and the University of Arizona, and Eddie has been with the Star since May of 2019. Eddie, always good to see you.
Good to see you, Bill.
And a formal thank you during my bereavement leave, a couple of weeks off there. Not like my grief went away. I'm still on the deep grief stage, but you stepped up along with some other local people in the media to really help out, and you had a great show.
I really appreciate you giving me that chance.
But. Well, you're going to get the chance again, I'm sure. Let's begin, Ravi Shaw, Dr. Shaw. Tom Horn is suing now over the dual language program for English learners. Is that program available in Tucson Unified?
Right. We have a number of two-way dual language programs in Tucson Unified. Davis Elementary, for example, is one of them. I'll be visiting sometime this month and looking forward to seeing the great work they're doing. And so we have a number of programs like that in our district.
So is this butting up against what Superintendent Horn is saying? Are you guys outside of what he believes the model should be?
Well, you know, we're following guidance from the Attorney General and the Arizona School Board, which has been in approval of our programs, and you know, we're making sure we're complying with the laws that's been interpreted.
Eddie, why don't you jump in here? What do you got?
Well, I kind of want to follow up with that. Dr. Shaw, nice to speak with you, number one. But Dr. Shaw, do you see this as like a kind of an attack on Spanish language learners? Because I know I was in a district where there were multiple different languages offered at the elementary school level. And this one seems to be singling out Spanish.
That's what it seems like to me as well, and I'm really confused on what he's trying to accomplish, because you know there's a lot of evidence out there that students who are taking part of these programs do better, and this is attack on what's good for students. It's attack on parental rights. These are parents choosing these programs for their students, and so I'm really confused why the person who keeps on claiming he's in favor of parental rights is really attacking this, something that's extremely a parental rights issue. To choose the best school and the best program and curriculum they think is best for their students.
And to that same point, is it also possible that the district could work to kind of, I guess, dispel some of these Mr. Horn's I guess concerns around this? Is this something that could be settled outside of the courtroom?
Well, we hope so. You know, we're going to be talking about two-way dual language at one of our upcoming board meetings so that we can really tell the community that what we're doing within our district, inform the governing board members so that we're all versed on the programs that we're offering and why we're offering them and how they're making a really big impact for the students that are able to participate in those programs.
I want to talk a little bit about vouchers. Arizona added about 12,000 students to what's called the Empowerment Scholarship Account Program in the last quarter. That means now the total enrollment is over 61,000 at the end of June, and it kind of renews the debate about the costs and benefits of the program. Dr. Shaw, do you think that this voucher program takes away, is really taking away the way we think about public schools, and does it hurt public schools, in your opinion?
Well, I think I'm of the mindset that many of in our community and many of your listeners are that public money should be used for public schools. And, you know, our public schools are accountable to everyone in our community. You know, we have an elected governing board, and we have state standards that we meet. And when we're using public funds, they should be used for schools that are accountable to the public.
Let's talk a little bit about the bond and the capital needs of the district. We have a bond program that will go before the voters. Outline for our listeners what is at stake here, Dr. Shaw.
I'm really excited about this bond. We'll be on the November ballot that's coming to everyone's mailboxes at the early part of October. So it'll be this fall that we'll be on the ballot for the bond. And we're looking to upgrade every single one of our 87 campuses around our district. We know that since 2009 and the recession, there's been a lot of state funding cuts, especially to capital expenses, and we're really falling behind in terms of maintaining and upgrading our schools. Every single day, even today, I was answering emails from folks that work in our schools about HVAC systems not working, about grounds and landscaping that needs to be updated and upgraded. And we're looking forward to getting approval from our community to a yes on this bond on Prop 496, I believe, so that we can get a really important infusion of funding into our schools. And I know we talked about this a few months ago, and I'm not sure if you remember the numbers that we talked about, Bill, but you know, we have over 8 million square feet of space in TUSD, most of it, you know, taking care of students and teaching our students. Do you remember what the average age of those spaces were?
Let me see if I can recall from our interview about 3 months ago. First of all, that's a huge amount. I don't recall that you had said 8 million.
Right, we have 87 schools all throughout our district.
Yeah, that's a huge portfolio. So I'm saying 40 years is the average?
You're getting close. It's over 50. Over 50
oh my
years old
goodness.
Average. You know, some schools are newer and are already upgraded, but and we have schools that are 100 years old plus, and so our average campus age is over 50 years. And as we can imagine, you know, the flooring hasn't been upgraded in generations. The bathroom facilities, the HVAC, the plumbing, you know, so many other pieces of our facilities are really needing some help in terms of upgrades. And so if the bond passes this fall, if your listeners, you know, vote yes on TUSD's bond, we're going to be able to upgrade every single one of our campuses. Every single campus will get new flooring, new new bathroom facilities, new HVAC facilities. We're going to be able to actually address safety and security in our district. You know, after the number of school shootings and other security events that we hear about all throughout our nation, we're going to be able to get new fencing around our schools, new door lock systems, new camera and security systems to help really address safety and security, which is a huge, I think, selling point for me as a parent. You know, I have three kids in our district, and I walk around my kids' kindergarten campus, and how easy it is for anyone to be able to enter is worrisome to me as a parent, as I imagine to many of our listeners or our parents or grandparents or uncles and aunts of our students here. And so with the funding, if the bond passes, we're able to upgrade our security and safety facilities all throughout our campus as well.
You know, a lot of times when voters see these bonds from a school district, it becomes a referendum on how the district is doing, how it is perceived by the voters. Would you agree with that? And does TUSD, does Tucson Unified fit the bill when it comes to how you're doing?
No, I agree with that. I think a lot of people use these as a referendum on our school system, and I think there is a really big misperception about TUSD. I think many in our community have called TUSD a failing district, and I think that really is mischaracterizing our district in many ways. And let's just talk about letter grades, for example. I'll ask another question in numbers. How many do you think what percentage of our schools would you think would be DNF rated right now? And how many do you think your listeners would think?
Out of your portfolio of how many schools? 87?
Over 80 schools.
Okay. I'd say it's now down to four.
Four schools, yeah. You know, we're, in terms of DNF schools?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're very low on that. You know, we're less than 10% of our schools are still in the DNF category.
All right.
And over almost 90% of our schools are CB or A rated in our district. And I think that's a testament to the work that our district has done over the years to improve the schools, to really use, you know, we talk about ESSER funds, the COVID relief funds, and use them to really maximize the benefit for the students with staffing and coordination of services so that our students that are struggling really can learn and grow and really improve in the post-COVID universe that we're living in.
All right, let's bring Eddie Celaya back into the conversation from the Arizona Daily Star. Eddie?
I want to follow up with this line of questioning about TUSD's perception by bringing up two things. Number one is University High was recently named one of the 25 best high schools in the country by U.S. News. However, it also came out that in 2022, the district's test scores were well under the state average in both math and English language learning. How do you kind of square both of those kind of, kind of ends of the spectrum, where you have one of the best high schools in literally the nation and a school district that is underperforming at a pretty significant clip when it comes to the state average, when you come to kind of that aggregate of test scores. Where's the real story of TUSD? Where does it fall?
Well, I think there's a lot of growth, and I think that really drives a lot of what's going on in our district. You know, our students came back from remote learning really struggling. You know, I have, like I said, three kids. My oldest is now in middle school, and so she was in the middle of elementary school when we went remote. And so I see her and other students her age, you know, coming back from remote learning, you know, struggling with reading and writing and math and so many other things that we test. And the growth has been really remarkable over these last couple of years. We have really done a lot of great work as a district, a testament to our staff and our leaders who have really pushed this, bringing in I'll use some terms and some acronyms, the MTSS coordinators, for example, and they work with students that are struggling to help develop plans for them to improve. Our CSPs, our curriculum service providers, that work with our teachers to make sure that they're trained and have the resource they need to manage their classroom and to help each student learn and grow effectively. So there's been a lot of resources, and they're just some small examples of them, but a lot of resources that have really been put in our schools over these last few years to really help our students that are coming in from all backgrounds learn and grow and really help improve over the last couple of years.
As kind of a follow-up to that, I know that you listed all those ways to kind of improve, but is there a way to kind of reverse engineer the success that's been seen at University High for, gosh, at least since I've been in high school in the early 2000s, to kind of reverse engineer that into the other high school programs and other magnet schools throughout TUSD?
Well, University High, as we know, is a very unique school. You have to test in to get into the university, and so, of course, that's going to have better test scores because that's a requirement for admission. But I'm really proud of what we're doing in our other high school campuses. You know, we had a board meeting recently where we had a joint one with our JTED partners, and so we were able to talk about Innovation High School and the work that's being done for career and technical education. You know, I'm going to be heading to Santa Rita next month, our high school in the southeast part of our district, and be able to hopefully see some of the CTE programs there on dental hygienists and other programs. You know, we have a number of different opportunities and programs at Tucson High that I've been able to see during my visits there. And, you know, some of the arts and music education are, you know, one of the world-class programs in Pueblo High School and Mariachi is something that we're really proud of as well. And they've come to our governing board meeting to perform. And so each of our campuses are so unique and they have different strengths and weaknesses as any school would. And I think, you know, making sure that we are working with each campus and the leaders to highlight the strengths and to mitigate the weaknesses and market better so that people know, hey, you're looking for this program. Here's a great fit for you.
All right, Dr. Shaw, stick around. We've got a break, and then we're going to come back with you for about 15 minutes. So stay with us on the live line. Mona's Danish Bakery. We love Mona's Danish Bakery.
Love it.
Eddie, I know you do too.
Love it.
It's home of the Danish Kringle, and as we get into the fall, people start thinking about Thanksgiving and putting in their orders for pies and rolls and everything like that. Mona's located northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Steve and the baking team do a great job. They're there very early, so when the doors open at 6:30, the pastries are ready. I will be making a Mona's run tomorrow morning, for sure, to pick up some beautiful pastries. They're open right now for lunch. They open again 6:30 for breakfast. Check it out. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Take a break right here. More with Dr. Ravi Shaw, the president of the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. Eddie Salaya sticks around as well from the Arizona Daily Star. It's Buckmaster on a Friday. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. we grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster here at the helm. Eddie Salaya from the Arizona Daily Star is my co-media host. Friday, we bring in a co-media host, and Eddie is getting better by the show. And I think all that experience he's doing with that podcast, Here We'd Go, is starting to really pay off. He's very comfortable now behind the microphone, and anything I can do to kind of set a good example, Eddie, I'm here for you.
Well, you've done a great job, and like I said, I appreciate all these opportunities coming up.
All right. So. Dr. Shaw, being a physician, you're very health conscious, obviously, and I see that TUSD is rolling out kind of a new array of fresh and nutritious meals for the students. What's that all about?
Right. Thank you for asking about that. So I think nutrition obviously is so important. We know that students that have all the micronutrients and macronutrients they need are going to be more effective in their academic performance. I had a really great opportunity to tour our food service department a few weeks ago. You know, that was one of the tallest refrigerated warehouses I've ever been in before. It was a three-story high refrigerated warehouse. It was chilly in there. It was just pretty amazing to see kind of the sausage being made, so to speak, and get a great tour. We feed, you know, this hundreds of thousands of meals, you know, throughout the course of a couple of months, and making sure that those meals are highly nutritious, are less sugar and less some of the saturated fats and some of the other things are really important to me as a physician caring for our community as a family physician. And so I'm really excited about some of the pilot programs that our Food Nutrition Services is coming up with to make sure that, A, the food is tasty and appealing so that our kids are actually going to eat it, and, B, you know, making sure that, you know, they meet nutritional standards.
What are some of the items on the menu? That can you share a few of those?
I think there's a lot of great ethnic foods out there. You know, we had our food services do some surveys with some of our students around the district and really look at their tastes and what they're looking for from nutrition services. We're having some more Asian options in some of our schools. We're having some more options from around the world to really, you know, meet some of the palates that are amongst the youngs and youth in our schools. So I'm excited about some of the wide variety of world meals that we'll be able to serve in at our schools.
All right. Before I get it back over to Eddie, we have a call on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Matt has a question for Dr. Ravi Shaw. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, Dr. Shaw, well, while I do appreciate the TUSD bonding necessity, especially dealing with the most, you know, the physical aesthetics, paint, you know, all the things, cooling, air conditioning, all the things that make a school. Two things. One, we've been disrupted because of COVID, so you guys really get a huge pass on trying to recoup yourself. But before all this started, you know, easily 7-8 years ago, we were trying to discuss the question of why are we failing? And I think it's two things. One, you know, it's no longer just your responsibility. I think you need to include a whole of government approach, just like we did in the military. It's the only way to deal with these things. So that means you got to include the business community, the parents, nonprofits, and yes, city and local governments. You've got to engage them on the importance, because every failed student is a failure that's going to cost them for the rest of their community's lives. Second thing is, and I'll make this quick, I don't blame the kids, and I'm not even going to blame the teachers. You've got to put the onus where it belongs, and you've got to help them, and that's the parents. And we have never really engaged the parents appropriately in this community to help them help their kids. We are failing families. That's it. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Dr. Shaw, a reaction to Matt?
Well, thank you, Matt, for those comments. You know, I think you're right on all aspects of making sure that we're engaging everyone. I'll talk about the families in just a moment, but, you know, we're working and partnering with the folks in the city and our county to be more effective in bringing more programs. We're partnering with the JTED, which is a separate governing board, a separate entity, to make sure that what we offer our students really is going to meet the needs of today as well as the workforce of tomorrow. And, you know, to your point about engaging parents, that is just so it's so important for us to do effectively. We have a new director of our family and community engagement, our FACE group. And, you know, I hope that this new director and the work that they're going to be doing as a department, family and community engagement, you know, is really going to be successful to activate parents and incorporate them better into the lives of their students and the academic success of their students. Because, you know, we know that, you know, the parents and the families and the influence that they have on academic achievement can sometimes surmount anything that we can do in our schools.
All right, here's Eddie Salaya of the Arizona Daily Star. Eddie.
So, Dr. Shaw, in January this year, the district was befell by a ransomware attack. And according to a recent report by KOLD, as many as 29,000 individuals might have had some of their private data and information stolen or at least accessed. What is the district doing to ensure its digital footprint and data are safe? And what is the district doing to inform those individuals who might have had their data accessed?
No, thank you for that question, Eddie. Yeah, you know, like you said, in January, I think it was either late January, early February is when the cybersecurity incident happened. And, you know, our district, like a lot of other districts around the country, hospital systems, governmental agencies, and even private businesses were attacked by the same group of bad actors that were able to access the information from our databases. So everyone affected by this, and we spent months working with our cybersecurity team and experts outside of the district to go through all the data and comb through it and see what was actually taken and what was actually stolen from our district. And that's what the most recent information comes up with in terms of the 20-some-odd thousand individuals potentially affected. So everyone that we know had data stolen or are affected or available should have received a letter over the last couple of weeks with information about what was potentially taken, as well as next steps such as data security and you know, credit score security, different platforms. And so all that was sent out over the last couple of weeks to everyone affected. And our district is, you know, working with our cybersecurity experts and our trust to really try to mitigate this in the future. You know, part of it is moving a lot of our data to the cloud. When it's on hard drives and other local systems, it's harder to keep them secure. And a lot of the cloud databases have levels of security that surpass what we're able to do on the local level and on the hard drive level. And so we're working to move a lot of our data and systems to very secure cloud systems that have a lot of different layers of security embedded in them to help prevent this in the future.
Is there a possible, is there a way to retrieve some of the data or to make it that just inaccessible on like a private server at some point? I'm not a huge computer person, but I feel like going to the cloud almost makes it easier to access more of people's data in one fell swoop.
Well, that's what I would have think too. I would have totally agreed with you when we all started this whole process. Like, yeah. If it's in the cloud, it's going to be more easy. It's just available to everyone. But you know, when we talk to the cybersecurity experts, and again, I'm not an expert myself. I'm listening to the experts and getting advice from them and trying to help our district implement that. You know, when we keep things in local servers and local hard drives and other means on a local level, it's actually easier to go through the security and subvert it. While it's in the cloud, it might seem like it's more vulnerable, but there's so much security embedded in these cloud servers and these big companies that run these cloud servers that it's actually safer and more secure to have them in those different networks. And so it's not cheap, it's expensive. And again, this is part of our entire capital infrastructure that has been underfunded over the last 10, 15 years. And we're hoping to get that approval from the voters to really get that infusion of capital funding with the bond. But infrastructure, cyber infrastructure, technology infrastructure is part of this bond package as well. And we're hoping that we can improve some funds from our current capital funding that we get every year, as well as use some of the money from the bond to make sure that our technology is as secure as possible.
It's very traumatic for any student, of course, if the family doesn't have housing. Is there any emergency housing support now at Tucson Unified?
There is. There's some new programs, and I was actually surprised at the number of students that are potentially affected by this. You know, we think of students that are affected by homelessness or housing insecurity, those that don't have a regular place to stay or live. It might just be a handful of students, but our latest surveys and data amongst our own students in TUSD show there's well over 1,000 students, almost 1,500 students that would qualify under these programs for being housing insecure or homeless. And that's much more than I thought just a few weeks ago before we had this latest number. So we're working with so many families in our district that are really struggling and that are coming to our schools, and we're making sure that they have the support that they need. And so with some of the grant funding that we have to really address emergency housing, we have vouchers for emergency housing. We have things to help families access the internet more effectively and for free. Monitoring and different assessments and other ways that we can really help support our students. So I'm really excited that we have a good, strong team available as a district and some grant funds that we're able to utilize to really help some of the families and students that we have in our district that are really struggling.
Dr. Shaw, I want to kind of have a little bit of a follow-up to that, but it's a little bit of its own question too. These last 2.5 years have obviously been marred by COVID, especially for folks in the education and school industry here. What is the kind of, I guess, response from teachers, from staff, from students especially, to the start of this year? This seems to be the first year where the yoke of COVID is kind of, if it's not completely gone, it's at least off of the shoulders.
There's a lot of excitement for sure. I think there's a lot of burnout from everyone. I mean, I'm in two fields that have a lot of post-COVID burnout. As a family physician and the medical provider, I see so much burnout amongst the healthcare industry and my colleagues in medicine and nursing. And I feel the same way when I work with folks in education, just a lot of the post-COVID burnout that's happening. And I think there are a lot of lasting influences from this. We know that in the post-COVID world, there's more addiction and mental health issues, especially amongst our adolescent individuals. And I'm really excited that our governing board is being fiscally responsible with some of the settlement funds that we received from the vaping lawsuits that we were part of with Juul and Altria and other organizations. And instead of just adding it to our base funds or spending it right away, we created a task force. It's going to be made up of experts in our community in healthcare and addiction and public health, along with our district leaders, to really look at what are the best evidence-based and best practices that we can implement in a district with those funds that we have available over the next couple of years to really help address addiction amongst our students, which is more rampant than many of us probably think it is, as well as mental health and other things that we know then affect academic achievement and outcomes for our students. And I think there are a lot of lasting elements of COVID in our post-COVID world, but I think a lot of excitement. I think our district is really turning our corner in terms of getting teachers and retention and getting students and retention, and we're we're, I think, in a better place than we were just a few years ago.
Before we go, transportation, getting the kids to school is, of course, always a hot topic. Is it better this year than last?
It is. We were really struggling a year or two ago because we had lost a lot of drivers because during COVID we didn't need drivers, and we tried to re-implement, you know, what they were doing, but we did lose a lot of individuals, and so that makes it hard to transport. You know, we have over 40,000 students. A significant portion of them use our buses to get to school or get home after every day, and now we have over 170 drivers, and that's the largest driver workforce we've had in 5 years. And we have an additional 40 individuals in our own training courses, and we do our own CDL, commercial driver's license training internally. And so we're hopefully able to bring back the workforce and open up routes that we had to close or consolidate in the past, and really make sure we're meeting the needs of our students and families. And I'm really excited about a potential new app. We're piloting a new app in a small group with a small group of families that kind of like looks like Uber, where you can see the bus coming and where it is, and you know exactly when it's going to arrive. And we're hoping that pilot goes well, and we can hopefully in the next year or two implement that district-wide.
And if somebody's looking to make a little extra money, bus drivers at TUSD are now, they're making pretty good money, aren't they?
Right. If I remember correctly, the starting wage is $18.25, and that's one of the highest bus driver wages in Pima County. And so we definitely wanted to address the staffing shortage and making sure that we meet the needs of our students and families.
Any final comments before we let you go, sir?
I appreciate your time. I appreciate everything your listeners do in supporting our district. And I just can't emphasize how much it's going to mean to our community to make sure that all 87 campuses get upgraded facilities. And I just encourage your listeners to vote yes on the bond this fall.
All right, Dr. Ravi Shah, the president of the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. Thank you very much, Dr. Shah.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
All right. Dr. Ravi Shah with us is our Friday Focus interview. Got some things to bring up with Eddie Salaya from the Arizona Daily Star. That will be right after this break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Be a great weekend to go over to Green Things and put some beautiful color in your garden and all of that hail-damaged plants. Well, they've got to go. I know they do at our place. Wow. 2 1-in-100-year storms in 10 years. It was a very destructive summer rainy season. Eddie Salaya is with us, breaking news reporter for the Arizona Daily Star, host of the Hear Weed, W-E-E-D, Go podcast, graduate of Pima and UA, been with the Star since 2019. Breaking news, the Molina Basin fire. You've been kind of working that story, I guess. Again, it's out by the range.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it was the firing range, somebody out at the range that this started, why it started there, but it is kind of similar to a fire that was like out there at the beginning of the summer.
Yeah, almost at the exact same point.
That
fire was directly tied to somebody shooting off and hitting thermite.
Yep.
Being cool.
So we got 1,000 acres, zero containment. I don't like to see that zero containment.
That's unfortunate, because when I started reporting on it yesterday, I literally started when it was 1 to 2 acres.
Wow.
And then by the late evening, it had grown to over 50. So to hear that this morning, that is discouraging.
Yeah, I know they are bringing in support, including aerial support and some more men and women firefighters. So let's hope we can kind of contain that before it gets too bad. All right. When it comes to the decriminalization of marijuana in this country, Eddie, you cover this. Mm. I mean, you do your podcast on this. What direction or what do you see? We're moving in a certain direction, aren't we?
Yeah.
And the train is, as they say, already left the station.
It really has, with all the state legalizations. It was kind of a foregone conclusion. So I guess it's time to bring up some green things in the Green Things studio. So what was announced last week, really kind of leaked, was that Health and Human Services is recommending that the Drug Enforcement Administration reschedule cannabis. Not move it totally off the schedule, but reschedule it from Schedule 1, where it's basically impossible to get research dollars and dispensaries have to file their taxes in cash, to Schedule 3.
And that's quite a downgrade.
It is. Now it'll be with, I believe, Tylenol, codeine, and something else that's kind of a little bit harder than that.
Yeah.
But this was, like I said, this would be a huge thing to free up money for research purposes. Right now under Schedule 1, it's exceedingly hard to do. And with it, when it's Schedule 3, it just becomes, hey, this is something we can look into. What are the effects of it?
Well, you wonder, though. You still got some really hardcore states that say no to marijuana, like I think Idaho
and a lot of the states in the Southeast, the Deep South especially. What this doesn't do is it doesn't really clear up, let's say I'm driving and I've got my medical weed I picked up in Georgia and I drive to Alabama, where they're not going to be okay with that.
I wonder about how does that work?
Well, it
works not well, I guess.
Right now it works not well. And under Schedule 3, there's still some question as to whether that would be a federal criminal offense at that point. Mm.
I don't know if I've asked you this, but I've thought about this question. What happens at TSA, Transportation Security Administration, with marijuana?
So that's, you can actually listen to my second episode ever called It's Flying High, where I talk with a representative from the TSA. And what I was basically informed of is that it is totally illegal to bring any sort of foreign, outlawed substance, whether that's cannabis or cocaine or anything. Mm-hmm. However,
they're not really looking for it. The their mission, as I was understand it, is they are looking more for safety. And what that means really is much more of a threat to something in the air. So they're looking for bombs. They're looking for weaponry and stuff like that. That doesn't mean that you should bring your cannabis with you or you know, try to check it or anything like that.
Especially if you're going to a state that is not cannabis friendly.
Exactly.
If you're on your way to Boise or somewhere, maybe it might not be a
probably
good idea.
Not a good idea. Yeah.
All right. You've got Mike Tyson. You're trying to line that interview up. He's been all over this subject.
He really has. He had originally back in like 2018, he had his first Tyson cannabis company, and that kind of went under. He is back with Tyson 2.0. Which is much more of a concentrate and vape focused kind of company, but again, still with cannabis. And hopefully by December, I've been trying to line this up for the last year, he will be on Here We'd Go. So that would be our biggest get ever for the podcast.
How many podcasts have you done?
I think last week's was 68.
68
shows, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so I've got quite the little catalog being built. It's not quite what you find on Buckmaster shows.
Yeah, buckmastershow.com. My gosh, how many shows?
Hopefully I can get to 38 years.
Yeah, I don't know, man. We've got, 12 and a half years of archive material. So where do people find the podcast?
So you can find
it. Just like Google?
You totally can Google Here We'd Go, or you could just go to any of the podcast or streaming platforms. I'm on Audible. We're on Apple iTunes. We're on Google Podcasts, all of the big ones, Spotify. And you could just go to Tucson.com or TucsonMarijuanaGuide.com to more directly find it. And usually there's a link to the latest episode right at the top of the page.
And it's a lot of work. They're hour-long, right? Hour-long shows?
Anywhere from 30 to usually 45 minutes. But if we do get Mike Tyson, you can expect an hour-long conversation.
And so kind of like every week to two?
It's still every week.
Okay.
And then last week I actually had a really cool guest. He is a cannabis photographer. And if anybody that has tried to take pictures of their weed knows, it is kind of impossible to
doing
capture.
A selfie, right?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. We'll leave it right there. Eddie Celaya, always a pleasure. From the Arizona Daily Star, we've got Matt Russell with Weekend Watch next. Eddie, have a great weekend.
You too, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rieto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Still presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Start your planning now for that three-hour drive east of Tucson. You're going to find some beautiful weather over there. Highs around 90. Looking at the long-term forecast, next couple of days, mid-80s, overnight lows, upper 50s. That, my friend, is delightful. Late summer kind of hint of fall type weather in Silver City. Find out more about what to do, and there is a lot to do. Great places to stay as well. Southwest New Mexico, spelled out, .org for more information on your upcoming trip over to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Now, the longtime host of Weekend Watch, always a pleasure to introduce the award-winning Matt Russell, award-winning Tucson publicist, dedicated foodie. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing well, and Bill, so nice to have you back on the air. It's
just, thank you.
I just feel completed this week to have you back, my friend.
Well, thank you. And as I've said on the air, I am just, this is the only normal thing in my life right now, this 1 hour.
I get it.
And it feels just terrific. And it feels so good to talk to you and talking about restaurants, Sonoran Restaurant Week.
Yeah, you know, of all the great commemorative weeks on the food calendar, you know, you get National Chocolate Chip Awareness Week, you've got Anchovy Appreciation Week. Well, one of my favorites starts today, and it celebrates Southern Arizona's dynamic dining scene. You're right, it's the Sonoran Restaurant Week. It actually runs for a full 10 days with more than 100 local restaurants participating. Now, here's how it works. Each restaurant has created special Restaurant Week menus with different courses priced at $25, $35, or $45 per person. And the best part, you can go online to see all the menus from all the restaurants to kind of strategically plan your week. It's at SonoranRestaurantWeek.com. Let's do this, Bill.
Boy, that is a lot of menus, but boy, you've got a lot of variety. There's 100 restaurants. Wow.
I love it.
How about the winery, the wine scene in the growing wine region of Sonoyta?
Absolutely. You know, there's an event happening tomorrow for my fellow Onophiles, happening in Sonoyta, that'll get you in the harvest spirit. It's the Great Crush Festival at AZ Hops and Vines. Local wines, live music, some delicious food. And what's a crush festival without some good old-fashioned grape stomping? Yes, Bill, you can remove your shoes, hop barefoot into the barrel, and stomp those grapes with your own 2 feet. And check it out. If you wear white, you'll get to cut to the beginning of the line. Just imagine what those grapes will do to your seasonal dress. It's the Great Crush Festival tomorrow at AZ Hops and Vine.
Boy, you're going to have a red footprint for a long time, I'll tell you. Somebody once said there's nothing more soothing than a great cup of tea, Matt Russell.
Yeah, and for a decidedly more elevated experience, the afternoon tea is tomorrow at 2 o'clock. At the Lavender Manor on the corner of 4th Avenue and 4th Street, you're going to have a great spread of honey lavender gelato and lavender taffy, lavender scones, all the finger sandwiches, lavender tea, all in the beauty of this magnificent 1903 Victorian manor. Bill, it's only $50 a person, and all those fragrant details are at this website, lifeunderTheOaksLavenderFarm.com.
I can smell that wonderful, soothing lavender right now, Matt Russell. Hey, Matt, have a great weekend, my friend. Always great to hear you on this airwaves. Thank you, sir.
Right back at you, my friend.
All right. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. Wholly responsible for the content of the program. Original theme music composed by Chris Stefan. Thanks to Rose Brandt, making sure the podcasts are up in a timely manner. Everybody here at KVOI, including my longtime engineer and producer, Tom Fairbanks, the entire team at Bustos Media Tucson. All of us have the same wish for you, and that is be well, everybody, stay safe, and I hope you all have a very lovely weekend.